Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forto. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Robert Forto and you're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on KVRF 89.5 here in the Mat-Su Valley, RadioFreePalmer.org, and sitting with me today is the host for Dog Talk Radio. Her name is Michelle Forto. She is the lead trainer at Alaska Dog Works, Service Dogs, and Basic Obedience. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going quite well. Enjoying the overcast afternoons we've been having.
You know, it is at least cooler than it has been, but we're still in the middle of summer here in Alaska. And to summer, for a lot of folks, especially down in the lower 48, it means very hot temperatures, but up here it's pretty nice.
It has been pretty nice. I mean, we did suffer through some above average temperatures in the beginning of summer, but we seem to have averaged back out. So getting out there and doing things with your dog is what it's all about. We'd love for you to share stories with us and let us know how your summer has been going with your dog here in the valley as well as all parts of Alaska.
We are for sure. And before we go into our topic today, we're going to do a breed profile of the Bernese Mountain Dog. Can you give us a tip or two about how to keep your dogs cool in these hot temperatures?
You know, a lot of people I've noticed lately on Facebook posting things about not giving your dogs ice cubes when they're hot. But I've always found that letting your dog munch on an ice cube here and there helps cool them down. It's a fun little treat for them. It does help with puppies that are teething. So I've always suggested frozen types of treats for our dogs. That can be something as simple as an ice cube. I freeze in an ice tray regular applesauce for a service dog puppy that I'm training right now named Thor, and he absolutely loves the applesauce ice cubes that we've created for him. But do be aware, if your dog is in an overheated status where it has been exercising or doing any sort of activity for more than 30 minutes in good temperatures, I'm talking about 80 degrees or above, you don't want to necessarily give that dog cold water or ice until it has the opportunity to cool down a little bit. Let the dog rest for a good 15 minutes before you do offer it water. That way its body can cool down naturally through panting.
And, you know, a lot of misconceptions about how dogs relieve some of that heat. Dogs do sweat, don't they?
They do sweat. They don't sweat like we do when we work out or like some of us don't. I have a particularly difficult time sweating. I always have, which can be it can be a pro and it can be a con. For dogs, they do exude some sweat through their pads of their feet. Also through panting, and you know, you'll notice that sometimes when your dog is really hot, they're drooling a bit. That's the way that they're sweating as well. For the double-coated breeds, the worst thing you can do is get that dog completely wet, like spraying it off with a water hose or a sprinkler or letting it get into a pool. Double-coated breeds in hot areas should not become fully saturated with water. It actually acts as like putting them in a sauna.
That is, because it's very similar to wool. So just imagine running around in a set of wool pants soaking wet. That would not be a very comfortable afternoon, would it?
No, absolutely not.
So one other thing about summer heat and dealing with the summer perils, not only here in Alaska but other places, is what about those pesky mosquitoes? How do we combat those for our dogs?
You know, I've noticed with our dogs, it depends on the color of the dog. I've noticed that the white dogs aren't getting the mosquitoes bothering them as much as the darker dogs, and our red dogs seem to be bothered the most by the mosquitoes, which I find quite odd. With a kennel full of 30 dogs, the mosquitoes seem to bother the cream-colored and the red dogs more so than any of the other colors, but our solid white dogs seem to be faring fairly well. That being said, when we deal with biting flies like we had tremendously bad in Colorado, the biting flies will go after those white dogs relentlessly.
And up here in Alaska, we don't have a problem with heartworm like they do in most other states in the United States. So we don't have to deal with a heartworm preventative like we do down there. But I would always recommend that that all dogs are on some type of heartworm if that is a problem in your area.
You know, in Alaska, they are starting to recognize the issues with heartworm, and some vets are opting to treat for it, but it still is not an issue in Alaska. Although, if you are a person that travels a lot with your dog and goes to the lower 48, that is a vaccination that I would recommend, or preventative that I would recommend. It doesn't hurt them to take the heartworm preventative. It actually helps save their life if they do contract heartworm.
Did you know that the female mosquitoes are the ones that bite?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know, I think if we had vasectomies for all the male mosquitoes, we would be okay.
I'm not sure that I would want to undertake that job.
That would take a very fine hand, wouldn't it?
It sure would, and some big, ugly glasses.
So take care of your dogs out there in that warm heat. Up here, we have about a month and a half, 2 months left of summer. Then we go right into winter. But for most folks, especially down in the more temperate climates, it's going to be hot for several months to come. So do not leave your dogs in-house just because it's too hot outside, and do not give that as an excuse not to exercise.
Absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind that Indian summer is always lurking out there, drawing us all out into middle and late October. We will be cooling down here, but I still enjoy that time of year here in Alaska. We get to do a whole lot more with our Nordic breeds than we do at this time of year.
My favorite season of all, with the exception of snow, is definitely fall. I love the cooler temperatures, and like Michelle said, the ability to get out and really enjoy the outdoors with your dogs. It's not too hot for us, nor is it too hot for them. So, Michelle, we're talking about the Bernese Mountain Dog today. You know, we had high hopes of contacting the breed clubs throughout Alaska and some other places in the United States about being a guest on our show to talk about the particular breed. We've had two guests so far, one Siberian Husky guest and one Golden Retriever guest, but for some reason or another, it is tough to get guests on to talk about their breeds. And, you know, I find that interesting because if you go to a dog show or a dog event, that's all people want to talk about is their expertise in that particular breed.
You know, that's quite funny that you even mentioned that. The biggest thing is the second I say radio, I basically get silence on the other end of the phone. They don't have to come to the studio. It's not this big scary thing. Yes, you do know what you're talking about, but the thing of it is, Robert, when you're at a dog show and you're chit-chatting about your breed and you are Miss or Mr. Know-It-All at that moment in time, it's easier to be a face of the business than it is to be a name of a business, or so to speak. So when somebody puts their name out there, such as we do, you know, Michelle Forto is going to speak today on Dog Talk Radio, people are going to remember my name. They have no idea what my face looks like unless they take the time to go to my website. But when you are in this dog show world or breed expertise world, chances are they might remember your face, but they're not going to remember your name if you're out there giving information about a breed. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes. There's going to be missteps and misquotes, and your opinion about the breed is going to differ from what the standard says or what the experts, quote-unquote, say.
That is true. And, you know, when we invite guests to our shows, we try to make it as comfortable as possible. We've been doing radio for about 4.5 years now, close to 500 episodes of one form or another talking about dogs, and I've been told from time or two that we do a pretty good job as hosts. So it's not something we're going to put you on the hot seat with. We're not going to pull the wool over your eyes, so to speak. We make it very conversational, pretty easy to talk about things, and we make it as easy as possible. So for folks out there that are listening, we have a lot of listeners, and they are all dog people. You know, I can't find a reason why, you know, a chef would be interested in Dog Talk Radio. But for one reason or another, lots of dog people out there listen, but not very many of them want to talk.
You know, and that's okay. So let's just move this forward. The breed I chose today, I chose because they're pretty darn majestic. We've trained quite a few of these guys in Colorado as well as in Alaska. I know that you've had run-ins or training sessions with these dogs when you were in Minnesota as well. And that is the Bernese Mountain Dog. And did you know that the Romans brought these dogs over to Switzerland?
I did not. And, you know, the Bernese Mountain Dog is one of my favorite breeds. I am partial to all the working dogs, whether it be the Bernese, the Siberian, the Malamute, the Doberman, the Giant Schnauzer. All of those guys I take seriously in terms of training. I enjoy working with these guys. But I did not know that about the Romans bringing them over to Switzerland. What was the reason for that?
You know, it's really hard for me to stump Robert, ladies and gentlemen, so I need to have a pat on my back for that one. But the ancestors of the Bernese Mountain Dogs were brought into Switzerland over 2,000 years ago by the invading Roman soldiers. So it really didn't say much more than that, but I believe the Roman soldiers utilized the Bernese Mountain Dogs for one of their best attributes, and that is droving and drafting.
And I would imagine they did very well for the Romans as they were trying to conquer the world back then.
More than likely they did. So the Bernese is also one of four varieties of Swiss Mountain Dog. And the Swiss Mountain Dogs, you guys are going to have to forgive my ability to say these names correctly. There are the Bernese Mountain Dog and then the Berner Sennenhund is how they say Bernese Mountain Dog there. The other varieties are the Appenzeller Sennenhund and the Edelbucher Sennenhund and then the Greater Swiss Mountain Dog. So thank goodness they came up with the English varieties because it is difficult to say their beautiful names. The Bernese Mountain Dog is aristocratic in appearance and ancient in its lineage. But what sets it apart from the other three, Robert, is that it has a long, silky coat.
They do, and these dogs are very prevalent in the north, obviously, not only here in Alaska, but as you mentioned in Switzerland. You think of these guys going hand in hand with their cousins, the St. Bernard. It looks kind of similar to those, and I would bet throughout the genetic history, there is a little bit of mixture of those two dogs somewhere down the line.
We'll have to investigate that. The Bernese is an extremely hardy dog, as you mentioned, thriving in cold weather, but they were also utilized mainly for working as drovers and draft dogs, as I mentioned, but watchdogs in the farmyards, mainly in the Canton of Bern of Switzerland.
I see.
So they were heavily used on the farm. So Bernese are very loyal to their humans. They love human companionship. They are willing and quick learners. One thing that you and I have noticed with the Bernese Mountain Dog breeds is that they're a little bit aloof, and that is not how that they are described on the American Kennel Club or any other website that I was researching out there. For the 7 or 8 of them that I have trained myself in varying ages and degrees of intelligence, I find that they are a little bit aloof.
They are. So to folks that may not understand what that means in terms of training ability, what does aloof mean?
It means that they have the tendency to learn something very quickly, but then test your patience just as much. So you're going to do a two steps forward and a three steps back situation with these guys. And if you don't remain their utmost leader, they're going to take advantage of you. They have a tendency to be silly and playful when you're trying to be serious and teaching them something new, such as their job. A lot of clubs here in Alaska use them for karting competitions and things like that, and I know for sure that if you are strapping up your Bernie to a cart and he decides at that moment in time that, maybe I feel like running over here and visiting this person instead, it's going to make it a little difficult for you to get him to do what you're asking him to do.
And this aloofness, as you had mentioned, is very common in all of the working dog traits. If you look at them as a group in general, most of them have that that trait in them. When you think of the Siberian and their aloofness and the Malamute and even the Doberman and the Schnauzer and the Rottweiler, all of them have that hard-headedness, but they have to have some of that hard-headedness in order to do some of these jobs, whether it be karting in the Bernese world or sledding or mushing in the Siberian or Malamute world, but also in some protection sports with your Dobermans and your Rottweilers and your Schnauzers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, please understand, aloofness isn't necessarily a negative thing. It can be utilized greatly because Bernese have the innate ability to seek out and learn and then deduct what needs to be done. They make really awesome therapy dogs, believe it or not. They are not the breed of choice for most therapy companies, but I will tell you that they are probably one of the most in the shadows. They are not thought of as a therapy dog, but that's one thing that all of the research that I did today really kept bringing back was therapy work, therapy work, therapy work. And that's something that's true to my heart. I wish that I could do that full time. But herding, therapy, tracking, agility, carding, obedience, and confirmation, I would imagine that these guys are probably a whole lot easier to finish in confirmation than a Siberian Husky. Robert can attest to that. What do they look like, Robert? I mean, I said long, silky coat. What are some of their other traits?
Well, a Bernese Mountain Dog should have a primarily black coat with the tan or brown spotting and, of course, a smattering of white. I guess I sound like a wine connoisseur here or a dessert, a pastry chef, but that's what they look like. They're a very unique looking breed, very similar in what they look like to their cousins, the Swiss Mountain Dog, but they have a very distinct look to them from the other more standard looking dogs that may just be one color or two.
Absolutely. They are black, rust, and white is what it says, tricolored. But what really makes them set apart from the other breeds is most people know what a Rottweiler looks like. Most people know what a Golden Retriever looks like. And I would say that a Bernie is similar to both of those breeds. The hair is similar to a Golden Retriever, and the blocky, strong, stout body style and head is similar to a Rottweiler.
That is. And let's talk a little bit about the conformation or the look of the Bernese Mountain Dog. The first thing that a lot of people like to ask, and rightfully so, is what is the life expectancy for a Bernese Mountain Dog? And it says here on the standard from 10 to 14 years. So it's not a dog that's going to age very quickly, nor is it one that is going to live like some of the smaller dogs that can live 16, 17, 18 years old.
No, but they are a working breed, and the working breeds have a tendency to have that shorter lifespan, and a lot of people don't understand why. When you have a dog that works and actually does a job for its lifetime, that does cut off some of their ability to live extended lifestyles. But that being said, if you have a dog that is from this group and you have it live a sedentary lifestyle, sitting on the couch eating your potato chips every day, it's not going to live near as long as it should.
Right, and considering what that dog is doing in terms of activity level also equates to its weight. A Bernese Mountain Dog can be anywhere between 70 and 120. Obviously, the females will be slighter in weight than the male, but 70 to 120 pounds is quite a dog, isn't it?
Absolutely. They also range in size from 23 to 27 1⁄2 inches tall at the shoulder, so just about as tall as an average three-year-old child.
That is right. So they are, very, as Michelle had mentioned, very compact, muscular dogs. That is a lot of weight for that that small of a dog. It's just a little over 2.5 feet, so there's a lot of weight and a lot of muscle there, which equals a very strong dog. Let's talk a little bit about that. What about training training problems in terms of their size or their weight? Are you thinking that for particular people this may be too much dog?
I'm thinking that any dog can be too much dog for particular people. It just depends on where you start your training. As you and I have always said, training starts the second you get that dog. With Bernie's, this rings very true. I would not suggest this dog for someone that is inexperienced in dealing with a headstrong dog. I would not suggest this dog for someone that is looking for a dog that they would consider easy, meaning that it's going to take some work. You're going to have to communicate with this dog to get it to where you want it to be. They have to be exercised. They have to be challenged mentally and physically.
So let's talk a little bit about health and medical cost and things for a dog like the Bernese Mountain Dog. This breed, like most of the larger working dogs, have very similar problems in terms of medical problems. They have eye problems, hip dysplasia, which is an abnormal development of the hip joints, and gastric torsion. That is a very serious problem for dogs that have broad chests, and it's very common in your Great Danes and your Mastiff breeds, but as well as the Bernie as well.
Well, go back to that. Say that again.
The gastric torsion.
The gastric torsion is better known to us lay people as bloating, and any deep-chested dog with, you know, large rib cages have a tendency to succumb to bloating. And what initiates that is exercising and then eating or drinking water too quickly directly after exercising.
Right. It's a very serious medical problem, one that can be fixed if you get there in time, but it is a very serious problem, and you have to recognize the signs and symptoms. And I think we should talk about that on an upcoming show. Maybe we can get a vet on to speak about that. But I know it's a very serious thing, and your dog can go downhill very quickly.
Absolutely, and I would like to put out there that if you have a mixed breed and you've rescued that dog from the shelter and you notice that it's got some of these looks and characteristics to it, don't always jump to the conclusion that it's a Rottweiler. Higher chances that it's a Bernese Mountain Dog in these parts of the country, and the tendency for the bloat is pretty high.
So a couple other facts. We have about 5 minutes left, Michelle. The Bernese Mountain Dog was registered with the AKC in 1937, and it was introduced for its appearance in the 19th century. And a couple other facts going back to the vet. About 85% of all Bernese Mountain Dogs will go to the vet for one reason or another other than routine care and maintenance, about 85% of the time. So this goes hand in hand with being a working dog. They receive injuries like we do, pulled muscles and torn joints and all that sort of thing. So it is very common for these types of dogs to be in the vet's office at least once a year. And in terms of costs, I always like to tell this to folks. According to the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America, a lifespan of a Bernese, like we said, between 10 and, what did we say, 10 to 15 years?
14.
10 to 14 years is an approximate cost of $13,000. So that equals about $1,000 a year, about $800 a month,
yes,
to care for that Bernese Mountain Dog.
Yeah, but that should be said that that's the typical cost of any dog of this size or working class dog, is about that cost. I don't want to deter people from choosing this breed for their family. This is a well-rounded, good dog for young families, people with younger children. I have a rule at our place. Anybody under the age of 6 years old should not be left alone with a dog under any circumstances. That's been my rule and my motto for over 15 years with dogs and kids. That being said, this is the type of dog that you would trust around your children. But keep in mind that anybody under six should not be allowed to be around a dog without an adult supervising them. These dogs are great family pets.
Very seldom do you see a Bernese Mountain Dog that exhibits aggression. Typically, aggression in any dog is lack of socialization from one thing or another. So typically, it's not an ingrained trait. And I'm a firm believer that in all the 168-odd AKC breeds, none of them are aggressive by breed. All of it comes from some type of environmental type of problem. So not an aggressive breed at all. And like Michelle said earlier in the broadcast, they make very good therapy dogs. I know you had trained one for a good friend of yours in Denver. The dog just passed away not too long ago, right?
Yeah. Mia suffered from a heart condition for a long, long time. And she was the type of dog that you didn't necessarily refer to as a dog. She definitely had delight about
her. She did.
Her.
And her name was Mia, and she was a therapy dog. What a pleasure to work with. I got a chance to meet Mia and her owner on a couple of occasions. But you know what? I understand that that Chris, your friend, got a new dog, a new Bernese.
I think so. I know that she's actually working with some horses at this point in time, too. But Chris is a beautiful person. She's one of those people that you will always find lending a helping hand. She was a teacher for a long, long time and just... Again, one of those people that you know carries the light. They're angelic.
That is true. So we hope to have covered everything we can about the Bernese Mountain Dog, at least from our knowledge. As Michelle had mentioned, I've trained several of these guys over the years, and we just had a couple of them in our kennel just this past month. What were their names again?
Tucker and Sam.
Tucker and Sam. And we've had Sam.
Except we call Sam Sam because that's how he likes to be called.
We have had Sam in our kennel a couple of times. He went through camp with us, and Tucker is a new dog in the family. A little bit fearful, but a good dog round and round.
Well, Sam and Tucker, I think, are closer to Swissies than Bernies. Their hair is shorter.
Right. So, but good dogs all around.
Yep,
so,
their family rescues these types of dogs, and they do a good job with them. Tucker came from a poor environment, and he's rehabbing quite well. So
the Bernese Mountain Dog is our breed choice of today. You can find out more about them by searching Google. Just search for Bernese Mountain Dog on Google, and we'll make sure that we put a link on our website on the show page for the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America. Michelle, about a minute to go. Anything else?
No, I'm looking forward to my first round with dip net fishing this weekend. I'm hoping to keep delving away at my chichaku.
You want to become a sourdough, as they say.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yes, this weekend we're heading down to Kasilof, and we're going to become salmon slayers for at least one weekend. And for folks that are listening outside, dip net fishing is something that most Alaskans take part in. It's something that every resident in Alaska is allowed to take part in. You go out and you do just that. You put a huge net into the water. It could be up to 5 feet in diameter, and you try to net a salmon or two. A family of four is allowed 55 salmon each year. That's a lot of fish, isn't it?
It is a lot of fish, and I'm sure that our daughter, who's turning 16 tomorrow, is so looking forward to spending her 16th birthday weekend dip net fishing.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that you have to introduce your kids to, because if she's going to be in Alaska for the rest of her life, I know she wants to attend college up here at the University of Alaska, it's something that she's going to teach her kids from time to time as well.
That's right.
So we look forward to it. We'll be back next Wednesday, 7 o'clock p.m. here, Alaska time, on Radio Free Palmer. And all of our broadcasts can be heard after the fact as a podcast on dogworksradio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at dogworksradio at both of those areas. Make sure you shoot us a comment, a concern, a question. We'll be sure to answer them. What breeds do you want to learn about here on Dog Talk Radio? And do you know somebody that is an expert in their breed? Send them our way, and we'll make sure that we get in contact with them. Michelle, anything else?
Have a great weekend. Catch all the fish you can.
All right. So on behalf of our host for Dog Talk Radio, Michelle Forto, my name is Robert. I'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.